It is a warm welcome to week 5 of our Talanoa series, Ngalufanifo, a new wave for mental well-being, Pasifika Futures Initiative in response to Pacific community demand. Ngalufanifo is a Tongan term that refers to surfing the waves, and in the context of our mental health service, essentially a new wave for mental well-being, referring to different types of waves, ngalu, unexpected ones, ones you can see from afar, big ones, short ones, sudden ones, and rough ones. Whanifo is the art of riding these waves. Ngalu whanifo, therefore, speaks of accepting those challenges, those waves, which are inevitable, and instead of succumbing to them, we embrace and see them as opportunities to apply and live out our values even more. Today, week 5, we're exploring the impact of recent announcements for parents, students and teachers on their mental health and ways to reassure and manage anxiety during this period of rising cases and exam preparation, work pressures, and with extended alert level restrictions, exams, work pressures and the prospect of Christmas and lockdown on my life. Looking at this word depression, what is it and how it differs from stress and anxiety? What do we look out for in others and ourselves? A very warm welcome back to Dr. Siale Foliaki, clinical lead for Ngalu Whanifo. Dr. Foliaki, a graduate of the Otago University School of Medicine and a fellow of the Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists. We welcome your questions via live stream, as always, on our 531 PI Facebook page. With that, Maloni, Dalohani, and a welcome back, Dr. Siale. Thank you, as always, for your time.
Alohani. Brian.
Okay, well, let's begin today, please, Dr. Siale. Your thoughts on the recent government announcements with regards to extension of alert level restrictions in Auckland, but ironically, despite rising cases and experts advising cases will continue to rise over the coming weeks, schools can now open for high school, has opened for year 11, 12 and 13, primarily for exam preparation. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, I think COVID is a really awful disease. And so the more that I hear about the types of, you know, and the majority of Pacific and Māori in Minimal Hospital, where I work. And so when I talk to my colleagues, and, you know, one of my sons is was on the COVID ward the other day, and I was just talking to him about, you know, the sort of what sort of symptoms are they experiencing? And, you know, he was saying to me that a lot of people are actually coming in with abdominal complaints. And, you know, because we think about it as a respiratory infection, you know, we think about breathing difficulties, but he was saying that some people have been in an excruciating abdominal pain. And so this is a virus that doesn't just affect our lungs. It's a virus that affects different parts of our bodies. And so, you know, even a mild version of COVID virus, I think it's really important for our community to understand just what a terrible illness it is to experience. And I feel very grateful that the government has protected New Zealanders from the sort of, you know, total deaths that we're seeing overseas. And so, you know, it's sad, the 27 deaths. We have to remember that, you know, Dr. Joe Williams, one of our senior Pacific Island doctors, you know, passed away from COVID virus by serving his community. So the risks are very real, Brian, and I applaud the government's efforts.
With that, what are some of the conversations you're having with your colleagues on the front line, doctors, nurses, clinicians, you know, that are dealing with COVID-19 on a daily basis? How are they holding up at the moment?
Yeah, so there's burnout at all levels of the system, right? Everybody is under duress. But could you imagine if we experienced what was, you know, experiencing in Italy during the breakout, or in England, where there were so many people that the hospital system got overwhelmed? Could you imagine the young doctors and nurses, how, you know, they would have to cope? And I've got a young doctor that's I'm friends with. She left New Zealand. She's working in England at the moment. And, you know, she's just signing death certificate after death certificate. Could you imagine how traumatic that is for a, you know, for a 23, 24-year-old?
Yeah. Mm. Now, with you know, a number of students heading back to school this week, year 11, 12 and 13, we maybe not go into many parents choosing not to, you know, send their kids to school. But what is the advice from you today for parents that, you know, have concerns about sending their kids back to school and how they can manage, you know, things such as anxiety and stress?
Yeah, look, what I want to say to parents is that, the majority of young people, if the research is sound, about 70% of young Pacific people really enjoy school. They actually find the structure of school and the re-engaging with friends and getting out of home and even walking, catching a bus, catching a train, those experiences are positive. So what I want to say, my first comment would be, the majority of Pacific kids, they're not going to experience too much in the way of stress and anxiety at returning to school. Often it reduces stress, reduces anxiety. But for those children that and young people where for a range of different reasons are going to be psychologically impacted negatively by this return to school. Some of them are scared about catching the virus off teachers and other schoolmates. There's expectations around exams of their whole lives are ahead of them. Some people, some of these young people want to do well because they've got careers they want to build. And if for and then those if those young people experience a significant amount of distress that their coping strategies get overwhelmed, they can suffer from depression. And we, part of our conversation today is about talking about clinical depression, which is a deeper form of stress, right? It's when it becomes a disorder or an illness. It'd be really helpful for us to talk about that today.
Most definitely. Well, let's dive more into that then. Depression, more on depression and how it differs from anxiety and stress, please, Dr. Siale.
Sure. I don't know if I describe the symptoms, Brian, it'll be really interesting just from your point of view as to what you think and think back over the course of your life and just see whether or not you experience these symptoms together as a cluster. So my first comment is that often people wake up, there's a form, depression isn't just you're having a bad day and you feel like you're a bit flat. Depression is the notion that you wake up and your day isn't going to get any better. And if you were to rate your mood out of 10, 10 is, the happiest you've ever felt. One is that feeling like life isn't worth living. People's mood is down that 1, 2, or 3 level, right? But more importantly, they actually don't think it's going to get better. So we have fancy psychological terms, but we don't need to get into the terms. We can just say that people feel depressed and they feel like their depression is never going to lift. And it has an impact on important things like your sleep, your appetite, and your energy levels. But more importantly, one of the questions we need to ask, particularly when young people are stressed and maybe suffering from depression, is if life isn't worth living, that feeling of feeling suicidal, that starts to creep into a person's thinking. And I don't know whether, Brian, you've ever experienced the thought that, hey, life isn't worth living. I don't want to wake up today. I don't want to get up today. Actually, I would be better off not being here. That is the type of thinking that starts to be present on a day-to-day basis in the lives, not just of young people, but I think that across that it happens across the age groups.
I can say hand on heart, Dr. Siale, there have been times in my life where, sort of dark clouds, but it doesn't last more than like maybe a day or two at the most. I don't know whether I, maybe go out for a bike ride or just talking with my wife, about what I'm going through at that particular time. And then, out of, it's sort of like the clouds, dissipate. But if we're looking at depression and, amongst our family and friends, what are some of the key triggers, key factors or signs to look out for? And then, how do we broach that subject, which can be very hard to have with people?
I think, before I answer the question, I just want to go back a step and think about the emotional state that young people experience, where it's almost traumatic to kind of wake up. The thought of, facing the day is overwhelming for them. And that notion that it's not going to get any better is a state of hopelessness. And if people get into that state, that's quite a dangerous state. And then they start thinking, if life is not worth living, they actually start to make plans about how they might not no longer be here with us. And that's a state that persists. That's not one day, 2 days. That starts to roll into a week, 2 weeks, a month. And you can start to see people physically withdraw from life. Do you know what I mean? They just isolate themselves. And for young people, the biggest trigger, which is what you asked, in terms of not just clinical depression, but leading into potentially acting out in ways that put their lives at risk, the biggest trigger is actually relationship breakdowns. you know, for the older adolescents, that's breakdown relationships with an intimate, you know, they're having that first love experience, they're in a relationship with another young person. When that relationship breaks down, that's one of the biggest triggers, but also relationship breakdown with our parents and within our family units, you know, sibling relationship breakdowns. So that's the key thing. You know, I think human beings are relational. And when our relationships break down, it causes us enormous distress. And if we're feeling vulnerable at the time because we are suffering from depression, it only takes something small on top of that, like an exam result not going your way, or, you know, another additional stressor that can, you know, lead to really, you know, tragic consequences.
Can I ask then, you know, I don't mind being open because it's good, you know, we have real talk. For myself over the years, you know, my parenting has not been the best at the best of times. And my wife says to me that, you know, you're always, it's sort of like you're parenting through your upbringing, which I'm, you know, can say maybe anecdotally is similar to many of my generation, you know, a lot of trauma, a lot of suppression and not dealt with, you know, and the shadow of that that sort of trauma and upbringing not only still haunts, but also determines how you then parent your children, and almost like you're passing on the issues that you never dealt with to them, and then it becomes like a self-sustaining cycle, sadly. How then to, you know, to break free of that, even if it's something just little, to say like, okay, no, making a decision, I don't want to be like, you know, the way that I was raised, even though I keep falling into that trap time and time again, Dr. Siale.
You know, Brian, I love your honesty. You know, I love the fact that you're prepared to talk about how a whole generation of us, you know, the parental experience that we had from our parents, there was a cultural element to that in my reviews, I respect. But in our modern environment where life has become so much more complicated, I think our children need us to explore different ways of parenting that involves much more, I think, communication, I think, is the key, and much more honesty. I think we should try not to necessarily pretend that we have all the answers when we don't. And I do think that I believe in the concept of collective parenting. I love the idea that, you know, if we don't feel like our relationship with our children is going as well as we'd like, to involve, you know, other people, you know, our siblings, our brothers and sisters, teachers, counselors.
Okay, then. Continuing with the depression, once we identify it, whether it be in ourselves or in others, can you take us through maybe a process, maybe before, during, and after, and being able to journey with someone through depression, Dr. Siale?
You know, by the time, you know, if a young person's experiencing, in our family's experiencing some of those symptoms that I described, right, and their confidence is down, their sense of self-worth is down, you know, they start to feel guilty in an excessive way about their own personal failings, they're not living up to family's expectations, they're not the people that they could be for their families, they start to feel like they're a burden to others. When it gets to that point, I really do recommend that, you know, families get some professional help. The research says that Pacific Island families, we're very hesitant to seek help, professional help. I do think that stigma is a big part of that. And I love the work that, you know, Sir John Kirwan's doing about, you know, as an All Black, saying that he suffered from depression and anxiety and then sought help. Do you know, when prominent figures in our society say, hey, you know, they struggled, it gives permission to all of us to seek help. So, you know, my really strong message to our community is that if, you know, a young person, they, you know, are suffering from some of the symptoms that we're talking about today, Brian, if they were to seek help, I'd start with my GP, because, you know, GPs have that relationship with families and hopefully with young ones. And if the GP thinks that they need some additional professional help, then, you know, a lot of these young people get referred to people like me and my colleagues at the hospital. And I honestly, hand on heart, can say that there aren't many young people that have come through with depression that we haven't been able to help them. Sometimes that's not about medication. That's sometimes about family communication and some family therapy. Sometimes it's some individual counseling and some getting them to frame their problems in a way that's not so stressful and not so dark. So yeah, I really do believe that young people can get the help, and that applies to all of us. If you're suffering from some of the symptoms that we're talking about, seek help. Start with your GP, and the GP will know how to navigate the system for you.
I must ask Dr. Siale, why does that stigma still, exist or pervade in our, Pasifika community? From your experience.
I think we grew up in really small environments. You know, when you grew up in a village environment and, you know, everybody knows you personally, I think we experience a level of shame because of our intimate relationships. I think the upside of intimacy is that there's always somebody to help you. You know, if life's going well, there's always somebody to share that experience with, because they're intimate. But when things are going well, sometimes that intimacy can also lead to a high level of shame and embarrassment. And I think it's got something to do with it.
Always such a blessing. Dr. Siale Foliaki, a clinical leader, Ngalu Wha Nifo, thank you so much for sharing your time, your expertise and your passion, Dr. Siale. So helpful as always, and wishing you all the best for the rest of the day.
Thank you.